Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Death Holler. I'm your host, the Reverend Dr. Death. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, Lawyer Raina, and we are back for Evil Dead 2, Dead by Dawn.
I did not know it was called Dead by Dawn, which is so dumb, but I mean...
tagline, kiss your nerves goodbye.
That's a good one. That's another good one.
Yeah, it sells it. Directed by Sam Raimi, written this time by not just Sam, but also Scott Spiegel.
Who was the inspiration for the character Scott in the first one.
Correct. Music by Joseph Loduca again. Made for a budget of $3.5 million, so they really amped up the budget. Yeah. It only made $5.9 million. But I know that they made a ton of money off this on the physical media part, because this movie has sold like gangbusters on VHS, DVD, all of it. I mean, like multiple copies of it. So
this movie was always a staple, and not, I shouldn't say available, but it was always for rent at Blockbuster. I remember this fucking, the movie poster or the cassette cover with the skeleton face, that I remember that forever. That is seared into my brain.
So here's a little funny story. I'm glad that you brought this up. Here is how I got introduced to these movies. Me and my buddies back in high school got introduced to Army of Darkness because my friend Dave, and who saw that movie in theaters, he was one of the only people who saw it in theaters because it bombed. Spoiler alert for that movie when it comes, when we do that one. But we watched that movie and loved the heck out of it and went back and wanted to see the movies, because clearly the way it's introduced, it harkens back to Evil Dead something. So the only thing we could rent at the local video store, which was a little mom and pop place in Bond, actually, little community over from where we's at, was the original Evil Dead. So for years, we had no idea that Evil Dead 2 existed, and we could not figure out for the life of us how Evil Dead 1 connected to Army of Darkness, because it made no sense, the connection there.
Yeah.
And when we finally found a copy of Evil Dead 2, and I can't remember how that happened, I think maybe it came out on DVD around that time and we could actually watch it, or they actually got it at the video store finally. It made perfect sense. When we watched the end of it, we're like, that's where he gets sucked up into the time vortex. Like, that's where it happened.
There you go.
We spent years not knowing how these movies were connected.
That's so fucking funny.
But it was so crazy because it was not at our local video store, but the one sheet, the VHS copy with a girl reaching out, that's at the grave, with the arm reaching out, grabbing her or whatever, and the blue background, that's the one that I remember seeing all the time, the one that we rented all the time. So,
yeah.
But yeah, this movie did not blow it up in the box office, but they've made so much money on distribution of this, like in physical media, and that's the reason it makes no sense to me, like why current day movies movie companies are so against like physical media, because that used to be how they would make up the difference on movies that bombed in the box office. It used to be that if it didn't light up the theater, they could still bank on making their money back by releasing it on, VHS, DVD, whatever it was, and just selling a shit ton of them. And now they're like, well, I guess we'll put it on our streaming devices, streaming service, which makes no sense because it's their own service and they're not making anything extra on it. So I don't understand why they've abandoned physical media, because that is another revenue source for them. Like, it's so, especially Disney. Disney even sold the rights, or they didn't sell the rights, but they've got Sony making the physical media for them because they're too good to do it anymore. It's so dumb.
Yeah.
Principal players for this movie, Bruce Campbell.
Never heard of him.
Again, playing Ash Williams, are handless now, chainsaw wielding, shotgun shooting hero. He actually is a hero, and I believe that's why I love this movie so much. Well, there's a lot of reasons, but he's a badass in this one. I'm bringing him up for Burn Notice this time. He did a pretty good job in that show. I was the biggest fan of it, but I liked the character that he played in that. He was like an ex-CIA agent or one of those, and he did a pretty good job as that character.
Yeah.
We have Sarah Berry playing Annie Nobi, the daughter of the professor who found the Necronomicon and summoned the Kandarian demons to begin with.
Damn, bitch.
she was a bitch named Becky. Anyways, she was actually in Chud 2, Bud the Chud.
So fucking dumb. Bud the Chud.
Bud the Chud. Speaking of Bud the Chud, we got Dan Hicks playing Jake, the redneck trail guide. Baba Sue.
Baba Joe. What Baba happened Joe? To Baba Joe?
He was also the, spoiler alert, the bad guy in Intruder, and I love that character he plays in that movie.
Okay.
Where else do you get a slasher who is literally just an assistant manager at a local grocery store?
Oh, my God.
Cassie Wesley DePava plays Bobby Joe, the eponymous Bobby Joe, Jake's tobacco-chewing girlfriend. Let me tell you something. I'm from Eastern Kentucky, from Appalachia. No offense to anybody out there, but I think that's a terrible look on a woman when she chews tobacco.
Hardcore.
You can have your feelings about smoking and how nasty the habit that is, but chewing tobacco,
yeah,
it ain't pretty on guys, but it's less pretty on women because that is a very masculine thing, you know.
Yeah.
It does not look good. Anyways, she was an actress on Guiding Light, which makes sense because a lot of these actresses in these movies were, you know, on soap operas at some point in time.
Okay.
Richard Daumier plays Ed Gettley, Annie's boyfriend, and he's the first to die in the movie officially outside of Linda, but that's in a flashback, doesn't count. He was in Teen Wolf, so, you know, you got a little bit of connection there to a bigger budget. Well, I don't know, if it probably wasn't bigger budget than this, but what do you think about Teen Wolf, by the way? It's a weird movie.
I don't remember it. It's okay, been a while. Well, that's the one with Michael J. Fox?
Yes,
I don't remember
it. And the sequel, God, I can't remember his name, the guy that played in Arrested Development.
Teen Wolf 2.
Yep. He's been in a ton of stuff, and I don't know why. I love that actor, but I don't know why I can't remember his name.
Hold on, I'm checking right now. So the cast, we've got Michael J. Fox, John Astin.
That's the first movie. I'm talking about Teen Wolf 2.
I did do Teen Wolf 2, but apparently
they're pulling up both.
Yeah, it is. I don't know. It's giving so much fucking names. James Hampton?
No, he's okay. He plays the dad in the first movie and the uncle in the second one.
They're not, they're just giving a bunch of fucking no names, honestly.
I got to do this. I'm going to die if I don't remember this. Sorry, folks. It is Jason Bateman. Don't know why I couldn't remember his name.
Oh, he's the first one that came up. I'm sorry. I don't know why. I was just moving on to the older guys.
Yeah, he was in the second one. They're interesting movies, but I don't know. Tubi decided to play them for me, like, because I had it on the background the other day, like, 5 times in a row.
What the fuck?
It might have been because I had it on Pluto. One of the two.
Yeah.
Played it 5 times in a row. And just hearing, there's like a song that plays halfway through it. And it was getting on my nerves so bad every time it played it. I'm just like, you know, I don't mind this movie, but I'm getting to the point where I kind of hate it because of this one scene repeating over and over again.
Are we sure it wasn't Cruel Summer? Because I swear every fucking 80s movie had that song in it.
No, I actually like that song.
So I know, it's an iconic song for the time, but still.
It's a really goofy song, and it's like played during a montage, and it goes on forever in the movie. They're weird movies. We'll review them during werewolf season for whatever they are. But anyways, Ted Raimi actually appears in this as possessed Henrietta Nobi, who's the obese undead witch in the cellar. And Ted Raimi, amongst other things, was in The Grudge that we have covered previously.
Yeah.
The American version, for those who might be confused. Denise Bixler plays Linda 2, the reassembled corpse of Ash's girlfriend in this movie.
Linda 2.
Electric Boogaloo. Synopsis. Retconning the first movie, Ash traveled to the cabin with just his girlfriend Linda, gave her the magnifying glass necklace, played Professor Nobi's tape, which summoned the Kandarian demons, and had to kill a possessed Linda before being possessed by a demon himself. Fortunately, the rising sunlight drove the demon out of Ash, and he was able to make his way back to the cabin before nightfall. Unfortunately, the demonic possession led to his hand going bad, and Ash had to lop it off and then destroy it with a shotgun. Now, well, did he, though?
Yeah.
No. Now, Professor Nobi's daughter is on her way to the cabin, and Ash will have to defend himself against a whole new group of deadites before the night is through. Will Ash recover the pages of the Necronomicon in time? Will Annie live long enough to recite the incantation to send the Kandarian demons back to the realm? What the hell did the hero from the sky actually do to get rid of the deadites in the first place? Jack all shit, as we learn in, you know, Army of Darkness. Too terrifying, too frightening, too much! Exclamation mark. other taglines. Pleasure, please. I don't even know how that relates to this movie.
No.
I don't. That sounds like somebody watched a porn and was like, hey, let's put this in there.
Pleasure, please.
There's only one movie scarier than The Evil Dead.
Fucking blow me. These are horrible.
The comedy horror of the decade. Pun.
Oh, decade. I like that.
The sequel to the ultimate experience in grueling terror. So it's not the greatest song in the world, but this is a tribute. It's basically what I get out of that one.
Okay.
Sequel to the ultimate grueling experience in terror. That's not saying this one is.
Yeah, they're building up the first one, which is whatever.
Visually, this movie improves on everything in the first movie.
Oh, yeah. Better budget, I would expect it.
By a factor of 10 at the very least, maybe 100. I don't know. I'm not, it's too late to math right now, but it's a lot. They had a lot more money, and so it shows in the movie. Better lighting, better ingredients, Papa John's, you know, it happened. I love the effects for Henrietta. I mean,
yeah.
Even the janky look when her head like extends and it, you know,
monkey
sounds. It's clearly stop motion again.
Yes.
But it's got that charm.
It's very Beetlejuicy, like the snake head, you know?
Yeah, it's very much got that feeling to it. And then I'm trying to think. The scenes where his hand goes bad, and he's like,
yes.
You know, and he has to cut it off.
We got the veins growing on his hand too.
Yeah, the veins growing on his hand, just like his sister's in the first movie, which is why I brought it up kind of in that last review. It's just like his sister had the hand thing, and now it's gone to Ash.
Yeah.
The scene where I love that scene where he goes and he's got her head in a vise in the shack. And then all of a sudden, he's like, where's the chainsaw? First of all, why is there a chalk outline of the chainsaw? Like,
that
it just
was
died.
Awesome. I loved that so much. He's like, the chainsaw.
Secondly, in the tool shed, and I'll bring that up here in a second. Secondly, when that body comes in waving the chainsaw, I love that whole scene. It's just like, it kind of scares you, but then it's so goofy that, it's got the good blend of the two.
It got me pretty good, I'm not going to lie. I will tell you, the Linda scene bothered me, but I thought it was funny when she sat on that stick. Tell me that was not innuendo. or a phallic, if you will.
In her endo, his intendo. Just saying.
Yeah. So, what I do want to point out, though, is, like, I understand how cool it was to, like, look for that chainsaw and maybe have his hand being bitten, but I feel like that could have been accomplished without revisiting and kind of retconning the first movie. I know he wasn't allowed to, I know that they weren't allowed to really reference, but there's no way, in my opinion, I could be wrong, that they could have gotten in trouble where he returned to the cabin for some kind of, I don't know, solace or closure, or maybe he's still in the cabin, losing his fucking mind, thinking about what happened, and maybe there's some kind of inner monologue where he's like, I lost my friends. They were like my family. And he kind of maybe discusses how he got there without going into detail. Kind of like making more of a solitary thing for himself. I don't think that they had to completely retcon the first film. I didn't like it. I'm not a fan at all.
I think it's okay, but it brings up some issues that we'll go ahead and get into. But first of all, for anybody who don't know what we're talking about, as we said at the end of the last podcast, go back and listen to it. It's a good discussion. They sold the rights to the first movie completely to New Line, but they actually ended up keeping the rights to the characters and the story. So when they went to remake this, or when they went to go make this movie, they couldn't use footage from the first film because New Line owned it. And so they didn't want to have to pay for the, you know, get the rights back for it. So they just remade the first movie basically in the first like 15 minutes of this one. So here's what it sets up. There are some people that theorize, and this is all internet headcanon, that these movies take place in different universes. That in Universe A, aka The Evil Dead, Ash either died at the end of that movie, that version of Ash, or he actually overcame the demon, went back in time, and he was the original hero of time that went back and changed everything, that this Ash ends up going and repeating the circle or whatever of, you know, the time loop.
Yeah.
So it's, so the theory is that cause none of these movies sync up just exactly. Like if you go to the end of this movie, when Ash goes back in time, he shoots that flying deadite and then they all praise him like they did in the book, you know, the image of the book.
Yeah.
Where they're all hailing the hero from the sky. If you watch Army of Darkness, they instantly just take him as a slave and then march his ass to be killed. Like they don't praise him at all, like in that movie. So that scene doesn't exist in Army of Darkness. So it's almost like if you want to go that route and you really want to, and just ignore the fact that it's really all done because of like rights issues and, you know, licensing fees and all that. They technically could be different versions of Ash in different realities and not the same one consistently.
That's fine, but why even have Linda back then?
And that's the other thing. It's a different Linda each time. So yes. That's a different universe, you know?
Yeah, I mean, again, like I said, I'm not a fan of it. I really thought just maybe, because as the movie kind of goes on, Ash is losing his fucking mind. So I really felt like just kind of overthinking about what he lost and what he went through would have been the perfect way to kind of roll into this film. And then, of course, you could have had the new people join him, too.
I don't disagree with any of that. I think that could have been an easier way to start up the movie. And then, like, you could have still had it linked to the first one.
Yes.
And then just show him as he's, like, you know, trying to leave the cabin after, let's just say it starts out with, you know, instantly with him like flying against the tree or whatever. And then he goes back to the cabin because he has to. And then he remembers about Linda. That would have made more sense than having to recap everything.
Yeah. Because the one thing he still was able to, well, they were able to still use in the film was the evil. So the evil fucking attacking him and taking him out at the beginning of the film to kind of continue where it left off without even going backwards totally would have worked. I think they did too much by having the Linda dancing scene.
Speaking of that, the reason why they claim that it's a different universe, it doesn't match what happened in the first movie. He never actually buries Linda in the first movie. He goes to, but then something happens and he leaves her body laying on the ground above the grave that he has dug.
Yeah.
He doesn't actually ever bury her at all.
Yeah.
And in this one, she climbs out of the grave and then like reforms and then dances off into the darkness, you know?
It doesn't make sense to me, but it is what it is, you know?
He also doesn't saw her up at all. I mean, because he goes to, and then you get blue balls in the first movie real bad in this. He has that cool scene where he's like snapping the chains across the table and he just like, no, I can't do this. And then he goes to barrier like whole. He never, the only thing he does, and I can't remember if it's in this movie or in the first one, that's because they kind of blend on this point, is the cutting her, and I'm pretty sure it's just in this one, cuts her head off with the shovel. Like, he doesn't actually use the chainsaw on her at all in the first movie.
Yeah.
So why is she in pieces that comes together in this movie?
Yeah. I didn't even think about that. Again, this is all stuff that to me was useless because they didn't even have to have her bite his hand. He could have just been evil from, you know, the fact that the evil fucking went down his throat. You know, or you could have had the fucking, maybe he's adjusting something on the wall, or he went to go check on the fucking deer that's on the wall, and the deer fucking bites him in the hand if you want him to lose his hand, you know?
The hand thing I don't mind as much, because I do like a deadite biting you or whatever, attacking you, and it's spreading from that. Because they're kind of inconsistent about how it spreads anyways, and it's a little bit more consistent whenever you have the deadite actually spreading it through their attack. So yeah. I don't mind that as
I don't mind it either. Yeah, the hand was awesome.
But and speaking of that, we have to go back, and Idle Hands is clearly a ripoff of this movie with the whole hand stuff.
It
and
is.
Done a lot more poorly than this movie. I mean, you literally have Bruce Campbell, and I love this scene where he's dragging himself along the floor with his fucking hand.
That, you know? Yeah. Oh, my God. That's so funny, actually, now that I think about it. Now that you're mentioning it, I should say.
And the scene, and his hand's, like, deciding, like, what am I going to smash over his head now?
Yeah.
And it's like, no, I'm not. It drops, it looks at the plate, or it has the plate, and it's like, fuck that. I want the knife. And
yeah.
Like, you know, I love how it, like, he, the way that they did that to give it its own personality.
You know,
and then, of course, where it flips him off. When
it's in the little rat hole.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That was actually, yeah, that shit was funny. This is an actual horror comedy. I'm sorry. The Evil Dead. Yes. Does it have little bits and pieces of horror comedy? Absolutely it does. But this, whenever that producer was like, I didn't know you were going to make a horror comedy, I feel like they gave him the middle finger from the fucking hand itself and was like, no, fuck you. This is a horror comedy, if that's what you want to know.
Is, yeah.
You know, this movie, just in the beginning alone, well, after they recap of what the fuck is going on and he's alone in the cabin, this, somebody had to have done it. I should probably check. But this, these scenes of him in the cabin with everything moving and dancing reminds me of Call Me Al, the song or the video.
The one with Chevy and the...
I'm sorry. It's the wrong song. I think it's I've Got My Mind Set on You.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yes.
By George Harrison.
I've
got my mind set on you. Oh, my God.
You know what it reminds me of? Hmm. Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Oh, yeah.
Because literally everything has a voice and moves, just like Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Oh my God!
I love that little dance he does too. Whenever they're all like, you know, he's just like bouncing up and down with the chainsaw in his hand, like it's pretty funny. And to go back, this is the beginning of this movie is where Bruce can start to watch himself. I was listening to the commentary where him and Sam. And I think it was Rob, we're like talking about the movie, and Bruce was like, I can't watch this first part. I can never stand my acting in this scene up until the point where I stopped crying. And I get why, because if you watch the beginning of this movie, especially during the recap, it is so cheesy. It sets up the movie for how he is, but it's so cheesy. He's like, how about some champagne, baby? And he's like, the way he says it is so cringe. And then he's like, I mean, it's funny and it's not bad. I mean, in that sense, it's just bad in how it's delivered. In a good way. And then he's like, I'm a man and you're a woman. Last time I checked. And I just like, oh my God.
This movie.
It's funny, but at the same time, I can imagine if it was me and I was watching that and it was myself, I'd be like, fuck, I can't, this is so bad, you know?
Yeah, it definitely started off interesting.
But it gets so good so quick, like that very first scene where he's a deadite, it looks really good.
It looks like good. They did good with his effects.
He makes a good, and they bring him back later, he makes a good deadite in this movie. Yeah, I'll just put it does. That way
I will absolutely give him that.
The funny thing is though is he's a very ineffectual deadite. Like, he's kept out like easier than any other deadite in the movie. Did you notice that? Like, they like, there can be like a board across the window, just a board, and he can barely get through it. Like, if you're going to be attacked by a deadite, you want it to be Ash's version of the deadites, because he's so goofy naturally that I think the deadite can't really deal with his body the right way or something.
Yeah.
And he admits, by the way, Bruce Campbell does, he repeatedly makes fun of Ash, saying he's one of the dumbest heroes in movie history. And you can't really disagree with him, because Ash is pretty stupid. He's the ultimate himbo when it comes himbo to that. Yeah, I mean, he there's not a lot going up. Even though he can create, like, in Army of Darkness, he can create weaponry from, you know, like, just basically school textbooks and, like, gunpowder and stuff, he's not very intelligent in a lot of other ways. So it's kind of funny watching him do his thing in this movie.
Yeah. It's intended to be funny.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just Jake himself, the way that guy plays that character. Like, I like that one scene where he's in, where he's talking to the Annie Nobi or whatever her name is. And he's just like, well, hell, I can take you there for 40. And then Bobby Joe gives him a kick or whatever. And he's like, $100. And she's like, throw in my bags and you've got a deal. And he's like, he looks and he just sees like a couple little things. And he's like, he grins at her like, you've just been had, lady. And then later it shows him and he's having to pack that steamer trunk on his back. And he's just like, I should have asked for more money. This is killing me, you know. he's just such an out there character in the movie that it's fun to watch.
Yeah.
Story wise, it's basically the first movie.
It's same remade, shit, different day.
literally a different day. The next day.
Yeah.
Now something that threw me off was, if you watch the first movie, he burns the book. That's how he gets out of that cabin, or how he destroys the Deadites.
Yes.
The book is not in this movie, so they technically keep that continuity the same. She brings extra pages that they found, yes, somewhere else, and that's where it actually makes sense in a roundabout way, because Ash in the first movie never did see that page that showed the hero from the sky, because that was a missing page that only gets revealed in this movie. And I love that line too. He's like, they didn't do a very good job. And I'm like, dude, you just talked about your own damn self. That's kind of funny.
Yeah. It's a good way to continue the franchise too.
Yeah. Knowing what they can do with it at that point. But I gotta be honest. There's a lot of stuff in this movie that just clicks for me. It's not even just the horror comedy aspect of it. This movie's got so much style to it. Like that scene where Ash is cutting off his hand, the way that Raimi frames it in the scene, and it's kind of like cockeyed, and you got like Bruce, like, you know, kind of cackling and screaming, and then he's crying at the end of it because of his hand bit, you know, like the pain of it. It's pretty iconic. Like, I mean, most horror fans go back to that quote. That scene is one of the ones that stands out for them in most of the movies they've watched. That or the groovy line, you know, which was just added in randomly, you know, where it just pans in on, you know, Ash and he's like, groovy, you know, like that's been a major staple, God, of the franchise.
So horrible.
Kurt Russell actually made fun of Bruce for a line that he delivered in this movie, in a fun way. Whenever they were making Escape from L.A.,
uh-huh,
he said, "Hey Ash," or he said, "Hey Bruce, say the line for me. Say tool shed." Because what happened in the if you watch the movie, it's not it's really weird how it's done. They didn't ADR it the right way. So, like, his words don't exactly match the way he says it, and it's so loud, and it's so, like,
yes,
it doesn't match the volume of the everything else. He's just sitting there, and all of a sudden,
tool shed.
Yes. You know, out of nowhere. Like, it's really, you know, he says it, and he says that it's a major thing that people bring up all the time because of it.
Yeah. I noticed that, and I was like, what the fuck? And I was like, they had to have added that in.
Oh yeah, it was just bad ADR, but it actually works because it's so out of place and bad that it's fun, you know?
Yeah.
It's one of those things.
Really, the only thing you could say about the story is how, as you previously mentioned, you don't know how Army of Darkness was a sequel to, allegedly, Evil Dead, but it wasn't. It was a sequel to Evil Dead 2. So that's really the only thing you can add, is how Bruce and the car get, it is what it is. We're discussing the movie. How they go and it gets sucked into the portal, and that's how they end up there. And he's frustrated as fuck, obviously. But I really think that's the only thing of this story that is different than what we got. They were leaving it open. I don't know if they already had Army of Darkness planned or if they're just like, well, this is where he is and this is what we're going to do.
They had Army of Darkness planned as being the movie that they were going to make for this.
I kind of figured as much.
But they were told that they didn't really have the budget for that and that they probably wanted to do something different first before they made Army of Darkness.
Okay, which makes sense. I agree. It wouldn't have made sense to make Army of Darkness after Evil Dead. It just wouldn't have.
You could have, but it's better to have this interstitial movie. I think so.
Yeah, I mean, again, they didn't need the beginning part, but, God, you're right. They could have. They would have just had to have some kind of rollover that showed him get into the portal. Like, maybe if they were just going to skip Evil Dead 2 and go straight into Army of Darkness, the evil comes, it attacks him, and it pushes him through the portal.
They could have done that, or they could have had it to where he goes back in the cabin, he finds extra pages in the cellar, has to maybe fight Henrietta or something to get them, and then whenever he recites it, he gets sent back in time from that. You know? I mean, they could have went that route with it. I mean, as far as like adding the daughter, I don't know that they obviously didn't have to. It's interesting because yet again, you've got another character that pushes Ash along to be a hero. Along his journey, because if it wasn't for her, she literally saves his ass in this movie. Like that thing at the end of the movie that technically she summons with the pages, but it was the only way to really get the evil and concentrate it.
Yeah.
The rotten apple head, as they called it. And whenever they were filming the movie, the one that he has to saw into its eyeball or whatever, he couldn't have defeated that thing. It was more than his abilities.
Yeah.
And her reciting the lines as she was dying from his own hand, by the way, his evil hand that was still around, that was the one thing that saved his ass. So, I mean, technically, he still needs help in this movie.
Yeah. He needs a hero.
And are we just going to assume that Bobby Joe also got some tree grape going on? Because, I mean, she got slammed into a tree, so maybe not, but
I feel like, if anything, I kind of was like, it's going to rip her fucking face off.
It looked very painful because they were thick. It was almost like Hellraiser. Like they were digging into the skin, you know?
Yes. I was getting more of that. I think the way, if they were going to insinuate grape, I got less of grape from this than I obviously, well, the other one was so fucking blatant, but if there was any grape, I wasn't really thinking about that in this one. I was thinking more of that tree's going to literally peel the skin off of her.
I can agree with that because it's kind of what they were, the way they set it up in this movie. Ed in this movie is basically wasted because he's just there for a few scenes and he turns into a deadite and then he's the one that flies in the air looking like Fred from Scooby-Doo,
saying,
dead by dawn, dead by dawn. Like he's the one that does that, while Henrietta's kind of, doing the same thing in the bait and the sailor.
They're just having a good old time,
That scene where Henrietta, like, they stomp on her head and her eyeball flies in Bobby Joe's mouth.
Fucking, so that is as iconic, if not more iconic, than the fucking tree grape.
This is in the trivia. There's a scene where they've got Ted spinning around in the Henrietta suit above them and, like, and she's cackling as she's taunting them or whatever.
Yeah.
You can see the actual sweat in copious amounts pouring out of that suit as they're spinning Ted around. It's coming outside or near his mouth or whatever. Like if you zoom in on that scene, it is just a huge, spout of water, but it's actually just sweat because they said they would actually drain off cups and cups of sweat out of that suit every day that he got done filming in that thing.
Fucking gross.
Acting in the movie, everybody hams it up, but it's they meant for it to be that way. It's a Three Stooges-like movie.
Yeah.
The I will say this, Ash and Annie, or whatever her name is, toward the end of the movie, Annie and Obi, they have some scenes together that actually are a little bit more heartfelt, and actually,
yes,
they both sell them.
Yes.
Like you can tell they're almost like love interest towards the end.
Yeah. Of the movie. I mean, they're going through some shit together. Definitely. Yeah. They have teamwork, which you kind of need. They understand each other. They work well together.
Yeah. And so that's the actual parts of the movie where there's like a little bit more heart in the movie. The rest of it's more played for comedy.
Yeah. I would say the acting is a lot more annoying in this film than it was in the original. To me, I know it's intended to be a horror comedy, but that Bobby Joe, where's Bobby Joe? It's a little too much.
It just cracks me up. It's right there where I want it to be at for him, because he's just so out there. But I can get where some people might not like, you know, where he's too much, but I think he was meant to be too much.
Well, yeah, just like in the original film, the shrieking fucking, was it Linda?
Yeah, Linda was the one that was cackling with a little like baby doll too much. Like, so face or whatever.
That's what he was to me. Jake was, you know, from State Farm, was what Linda was to most people in the first film.
I do like the scene, though, where they just literally did this because they wanted to put Bruce through the paces again, where they not only knock him down, but then they kick him while he's down when they first come into the cabin. Like, you know, Jake says, "You son of a bitch," and then, like, kicks his head, you know, while he's laying on the ground. Like, I was sitting there watching that. I'm like, you're just doing that because you want, you know, Bruce to suffer a little bit. That's the reason you're doing this. We cover the visuals. I mean, the visual effects are better. Even the scenes. Now, here's something. I don't know how you feel about this, and this is in the beginning part of it. So it's part of the part I think that you're not too keen on anyways. I don't like that scene necessarily where they show him at the bridge in this one, the way it's way more done up. It's like it's over a canyon and it's like it's railroad ties or something that are like crinkled back, and it's, you know, it's really like fakey looking. I like it better in the first movie where it's just like a wooden bridge that's kind of like collapsed in and they can't get across it.
I mean, that's simple and it makes sense.
Yeah, I feel like it's... That seems a little too much, but that scene at the end, though, with the apple head and the way that they did the swirl for the time loop and all that, that looks pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
In the movie.
It's aight.
As far as the music, this movie has more, very much more pronounced music, more maudlin music, especially like when, Bruce is by himself and he's remembering Linda. Linda's theme, as I like to call it. That's the one Linda's that saves theme. Him.
Yeah.
That the piano, you know, that's playing.
Oh,
it's,
God.
It's way more pronounced in this movie than it is in the first one.
Yeah.
I've been saying everything. What do you want to have to say about all this? Because I get the vibe that this one's just not hitting for you.
I wouldn't say that it's not hitting for me. The beginning of the movie was a big kind of a turnoff for me, if you will. And then, like I said, the hillbillies kind of got on my nerves. But it really does pick up because the comedy, I think Bruce, why can't I think of his quotation mark love interest name for off the bat?
Are you talking about Annie or are you talking about Linda?
I think Annie, not Linda. Ugh, fuck Linda. I think Bruce, Annie, and Henrietta had the best on-screen chemistry, if you will.
Okay.
In terms of working with each other. So they really reeled it in for me. And then the excitement really does kind of pick up with that, too, because you get more action, you get more horror, you get more gore. Even the comedy with the eyeball, that shit was funny. But, yeah, this movie, I think because it was just pretty much the same story as the other one, it was kind of ran through a little bit for me.
Okay.
But I do appreciate the other things that the things that they tried to do to pull away from it. It does make sense to me, though, why they had, although they had better visuals and everything, it does make sense to me why it didn't do as well. Which is sad.
It's funny because this one's more pirated. This is the one that more people go after as far as like trying to get the movie than the first one.
That's so funny. But you did say that there's people that are in their camps, because it sounds like, if I were to guess, I'm in camp, you know, Evil Dead 1, and it sounds like you might be camp Evil Dead 2. You did kind of mention it in the last podcast where like there's things you liked a little bit better in this film.
It's the fact that Bruce becomes the chainsaw one-handed badass in this movie. Yes. The lines that he delivers, which is what you
yes his one-liners for. Are amazing in this. Which the one-liners from this is probably what we get in the Evil Dead 2 game, or Evil Dead game, sorry.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yes, it's definitely not.
And this and Army of Darkness are the ones where the one-liners come from, for sure. And then this is the movie. This is really the movie that set the tone for the series. I mean, the series is based off this way more than part one, like, ever thought about being.
Because I think part one was it really intended to be a horror film. But I think you and I know that horror comedy franchises tend to do very well.
It's because you can sell them to people who are not mm-hmm. horror fans.
I agree with that. And, you know, I mean, obviously it's funny. Am I a real horror fan? Because I love horror comedies, which is so insane that I don't place this one on a pedestal as much, you know. It just didn't hit as good for me, and I don't know why. Like, if I were to have to rewatch one, it would definitely have been the first one.
Like I said in the first podcast, I go through spurts, like changes on how I feel about these movies. So I could see you possibly changing on that if you was to give yourself some time.
Okay, which it's definitely possible.
Because here's the thing: if you watch this movie and you kind of ignore that Evil Dead 1 exists, you get a full movie out of this. You don't need the first one.
Well, and this is my first time watching this. Excuse me. I did watch it a few times, so it's my first few times watching this ever. I don't think I've seen... Oh, that's a lie, because I've seen the eyeball. It's like I erased a chunk of it. I do remember the eyeball, though, popping out and going into everyone's mouth. Oh, my God. I don't know. But that being said, though, I remember watching this all the way through, and the problem is I had just freshly watched the first one.
And it makes a huge difference.
Do you think that Evil Dead could exist without the franchise, without Evil Dead 1? It sounds like you were thinking that.
I'm saying that if you can start with part two and have a perfectly good time watching Army of Darkness and then yes. Ash versus Evil Dead and not even miss the first movie. Do I think that you should do that? No, because I love the first movie. But I'm just saying that you could totally do that and you wouldn't miss a beat by doing it.
Yeah. I think I was just too this movie put off really by that does, beginning.
This really is the franchise maker, this one.
Yeah, I'll agree to that. It's just so hard when you have such a good first movie that has that title, you know?
And one that is actually scary. You know, that makes a difference too. It depends on what you're looking for, but I mean, I'm in the camp right now that I appreciate this movie more just because this gives me the Ash that I want whenever I watch these movies. The one that's kind of incompetent, but he's really not. He kind of like sometimes he like lucks into how he like gets by, but then at the same time he's got enough of determination that even if he gets his ass handed to him, which he does constantly, he makes it through because he is, I mean, even if he's forced to do it because he has no other options, as in Army of Darkness, where he literally fucks everybody over and then is just going to let them stay fucked while he goes about his merry way and then he has to change his tune. He will get it done. I mean, if he has to do it, so... And I like this Ash better than the one in the first movie.
I like both of them because I'm blending both of the movies. I don't give a fuck what happened in the beginning of the second movie. I know what happened in the first movie, and I really think what happened in the first movie made Ash who he was in the second film. I think those two go together. Now, they weren't allowed to do that, and that is the studio's fault. That is not the fault of Sam Raimi, you know, and Bruce Campbell at all. I get what they were trying to do, and I respect it. It still threw me off, I don't know if it's thrown off other fans as much as it has me, but I really think Ash had to be that weakling. He's not a Mary Sue. You know, he had to go through some shit to be able to handle some shit.
But he, even in this movie, he's not necessarily a Gary Stu because, like I said, he still has to have Annie save his ass. Yes, he goes toe-to-toe with Henrietta in the basement, but she kicks his ass in the basement. Like, he barely makes it out of there.
That is true. She fucking had. To be fair, it's Sam Raimi in a costume. Or Ted. It's a man. That's not a woman. That's a man.
That is a man. Transgender rights. Evil Dead 2. He gets his ass kicked by Jake in this movie, of all things. Like, Jake hands him his ass several times. Like, he, and it's only when he turns into dead-eyed Ash that he's able to turns the table.
That is pretty funny. That is funny and true, but I don't know. I guess, I don't know, because like, he kept recovering and coming back, but you're right. He did have to turn into a deadite, so there's a lot of things that I guess I'm piecing together too much that I'm just like,
I think that part two gets hurt by watching part one before it.
It has to, because I'm a part one camper right now.
And it's bad, too, because you would think they should be watched together, but they really don't need to be. I mean,
they don't. Yeah, I agree with that. I just, like I said, I respect one so much. Not respect. It's not like you have to. I don't have to do shit. I could say fuck part one and just enjoy part two, because it's like they explain it. You know, yeah, I understand. He's at the cabin. He's just with his girlfriend. It's just the two of them. And shit goes horribly wrong. You can continue the franchise with just that knowledge. But because part one was so fucking good, and then he had his friend that was actually the fucking badass, but he loses that muscle, and then his friend turns on him, and I don't know.
I do miss the fact that they don't acknowledge Scott as having anything to do with any of it. I mean, if it's just Ash and Linda, well, A, how much dead-eye information did he really get from the first movie if he just had just her? I mean, if it was only her to have to deal with.
Exactly.
And then, although he does still have to go through the paces in this one, but, I mean, you know. And then, also, it loses something by, I agree with him, like, going from the passive, you know, like, I don't really want to hurt these people who are my friends to... they're obviously evil, and then to my favorite version of Ash, which is Army of Darkness Ash, where he's literally like, they go to help an old woman who's fell down, and he's like, she's a witch, get an axe.
Witch!
He has no sympathy whatsoever for the deadites at that point. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, like I said, he had to go through some shit to handle some shit.
He's seen a thing or two, so that's why he knows a thing or two, basically, like farmers insurance.
I mean, Bruce definitely grew as an actor in this film.
Oh, for sure.
Despite how he felt in the first, you know, half of it, if you will.
Yeah, he does some things in this movie that are pretty fucking good. Like that scene where he's fighting with himself in the mirror.
Oh, that
like
was cool. Crazy, yeah.
And he's like, you just cut up your girlfriend. I don't think we're good at all, or whatever the way he phrases it, you know. He does some good things in this movie.
He does. I mean,
you know. That's why honestly this movie is my current favorite, you know, because of the fact that they show a lot of growth in him, but at the same time they put a lot of effort in, and it's still got, and that's the other thing too, it's still got the Evil Dead vibe to it, the Cabin in the Woods vibe, because that's the one thing that I really don't like about Army of Darkness is that it doesn't have that at all. It's like a medieval adventure, you know, more than anything, whereas this one still has a little bit of the, we're trapped in a cabin in the scary woods, get us the fuck out of here, you know. Going on the trivia before we give because we were kind of getting into our analysis a little bit there on our ratings.
Yes.
Stephen King was such a huge fan of The Evil Dead 1981 that he convinced producer Dino De Laurentiis over dinner, who was producing King's Maximum Overdrive at the time. I wonder how much cocaine was involved in this dinner, by the way. To have his production company, DEG, finance Evil Dead 2.
Hell yeah.
You know what's funny about this is I literally just watched the Dino De Laurentiis movie today. I watched the 1970s King Kong. They came out with like a fancy 4K of it, which looks really good. and seeing Jeff Bridges and Jessica Lange, you know, the older lady that was in American Horror Story, you know, that was the next door neighbor, the mom or whatever.
Yeah.
She was a hottie back in the 70s, like show.
Okay, but look at her as an older lady.
She's a pretty older woman. I'm not saying.
Jessica Lange.
Yeah, but you go back and you see her back in her heyday in that King Kong movie. Ooh, she's smoke show.
Yeah, she's done well. And I like, she's pretty fucking natural too for the most part.
The strangest thing though was hearing her voice back in the 70s, because it was a very feminine, like, you know, high pitch, not real high pitch, but like very perky, you know, like girlish like voice. And there was only one line in the movie she delivered that kind of dropped her voice a little bit and kind of raspy sounding, you know, like she is now, you know, as an older woman. And it was weird hearing it. It's like, honey, that's what you're going to sound like all the time. That one way that you did that.
She's got that smoke show mature voice. Yeah.
And she don't have it at all in the 70s, because I guess the smoke hadn't got to her yet, you know. It's so weird. But anyways, during the scene where the severed head of Linda bites Ash's hand, Bruce Campbell says the single line to Workshed.
It's Workshed, not Bullshed.
This line was later redubbed in post-production due to the quality of the audio, giving a strange, slightly disproportionate sound to the audio around it. 9 years later, while filming his cameo in Escape from L.A., the first thing Kurt Russell said to Bruce Campbell on the set was jokingly, "Say Workshed." I feel like if Kurt Russell jokes around with you, you've got it made at that point. I just get the vibes that, like, he's just a cool dude to be around, like Kurt Russell is. Sam Raimi credits Stephen King with making this film possible. Raimi couldn't acquire enough money to fund the production, so King, being a huge fan of the original, convinced Dino De Laurentiis to fund it. Raimi later made appearances in the miniseries The Stand and The Shining, both written by King. The miniseries, by the way, not the Kubrick film, so different movies, different films or whatever.
Okay.
The large demonic head Ash battles in the climax of the movie was nicknamed by the crew the Rotten Apple Head, and it was too large and cumbersome for the crew to take back to California, so they left it in North Carolina, which is where it was filmed at, and it soon disappeared. Its whereabouts were unknown for a number of years until it was found in a Halloween haunted house attraction just outside of Wadesboro, North Carolina.
Hell yeah. Score for them.
That's a legit haunted house if they've got a piece of Evil Dead 2 inside.
They were like, look what I found, Bobby Joe.
Bobby Joe. Bruce, this is Bruce Campbell's favorite of the trilogy.
Okay.
It's mine too, spoiler alert. Anyways, Ash's chainsaw appears to switch hands in one scene. This is because Sam Raimi decided Ash should walk the opposite way across the room in that scene, so he flipped the camera negative, so that's the reason his hand flips on which
one's
the one with the chainsaw. Bruce completely improvised the scene where he fights his possessed hand in the kitchen. Sam Raimi praised his performance and used the first take.
Oh, my God. Respect level went up a notch for this film. That's hella funny.
Well, that's pretty good when you use the first take. I mean, that says a lot. The recap of The Evil Dead includes the same shot where the evil force runs through the forest and cabin and then rams into the Ash. Bruce Campbell claims to have suffered a broken jaw while filming the scene and all that stuff about the motorcycle.
Yeah.
But it was not, you know, we've said before, that's not really how it happened. This story happened during the making of the first movie, not the sequel. Secondly, the story was concocted by the two of them to see how many people would believe it. In reality, he ran through the cabin with it on his head. The similar scene in Evil Dead 2 was most likely filmed the same exact way, with just Raimi or whoever the crew was running wildly through the cabin with the camera mounted to their head. The sexy, surly Bobby Joe was inspired by Holly Hunter, who was a housemate of Sam Raimi's in the early 80s, along with Joel Cohen and Frances McDormand. One particular incident inspired the character. Hunter was auditioning for a hooker part and was unusually made up and wearing a sexy short-skirted outfit. She became angry at Raimi when he somewhat leered at her. Raimi pulled for Hunter to play the part, but the producers wanted someone sexier.
Wow. Dirty.
Yeah, I think he described it on that commentary. He said that he looked at her and said, you know what? You look pretty good. And she's like, so this is what you like? Ooh, somebody looks like a fucking whore. And he's like, calm down. I was just paying you a compliment. And I can imagine, you know, if you live with a woman like that, that's probably what's going to happen. So, yeah.
Yes, the answer is yes. They like us to look like whores, okay? Not outside. Inside only, and only with you, not with others.
The smoke that comes from the chainsaw is, again, tobacco smoke.
So funny.
Sam Raimi rigged tubing to the chainsaw, hit off camera, and blew cigarette smoke through a tube to create the effect. The secondhand smoke that Bruce Campbell has had to endure during his filming of these movies. The actors were completely blind when they had to wear opaque contact lenses when they were playing the possessed version of their characters. The only way they knew how and where to move was through rigorous rehearsals.
Wow.
That also explains why Ash does that jilting walk that he does when he's a deadeye, because he's probably trying to figure out where his fucking feet are going in front of him. The producers insisted upon using different colors of blood to avoid an X rating. That proved futile, as the MPAA gave the film an X anyways, and they just released the film unrated. They said, fuck it. During the filming of the original Evil Dead, Irvin Shapiro suggested a sequel to Sam Raimi, who then thought up a story together with screenwriter Sheldon Lettich where Ash is tossed through a time portal to battle deadites in the Middle Ages. When Raimi announced the movie's production, they even made up a mock-up poster of Ash holding a chainsaw in medieval times. According to this poster, it was at that point originally titled Evil Dead 2, Evil Dead and the Army of Darkness. However, they couldn't raise the budget for this idea, so that project was buried and Raimi made Crime Wave 1985 instead. When that movie wasn't successful, Raimi got back with Evil Dead 2 producer Dino De Laurentiis and eventually agreed to finance this film, but they insisted that the story be similar to the first one, which had been popular in Italy, and some unofficial remakes and sequels had been made there. Raimi was also forced to keep the action situated in the cabin to keep the budget manageable. His original outline ultimately became the plot for Army of Darkness, which became the third Evil Dead film.
Jesus.
So this was going to be the one set in the past, but they just couldn't get the budget for it. Many scenes were deleted from the movie, and according to official reports, all of them and original version of the movie are lost. Some of those scenes are Henrietta in her rocking chair, while the professor reads the incantations, her demonic eyes are unveiled in the cabin's light.
Which would make sense for the rocking chair at the beginning of the movie.
Why it keeps rocking back and forth, yeah. Linda's severed head throwing up black bile on Ash when he was trapped in the vial. That is why the black slime suddenly appears around her mouth in one of the scenes while her head's in the vise.
Kind of stupid.
If you notice, it's not there in the next scene it is, and that's because she vomits on Ash and, you know, in between. Linda's severed head extending its long snake-like tongue in the Ash's mouth while in the rocking chair.
That would have been funny.
An extended take of the blood flow with green and yellow blood. An extended sequence of half-headed Ed running around after the characters and eventually is chopped into pieces for his body parts flopping on the floor.
Ew.
A possessed Ash eating a squirrel as he runs after Annie. That would have been pretty funny, actually. Ash's demonic face morphing back to normal after taking his dead girlfriend's necklace. You know, in the movie, whenever he converts back, they pan around to his back and they just kind of show him, like, you know, from that angle. Fans of the movie did manage to find a rare 36-minute work print of the film, which only has a very early versions of the opening and ending scenes and a few extra shots, including an old rare TV version of the movie with many alternate and extended scenes. But unfortunately, it doesn't include all the famous deleted scenes on it. So we'll never have those. They're gone for good. Since cast and crew had become hardened and experienced from the making of The Evil Dead, the production of this sequel wasn't nearly as chaotic as the original, with all of its terrible living conditions and setbacks and everything else that we covered in the first episode of this podcast. There were still plenty of weird phenomenon, though. While The Evil Dead had endured an unexpectedly cold winter, Evil Dead 2 was shot during a brutal heat wave. Also, a rat was seen on the stairs over Bruce Campbell's shoulder while he was locked in the cellar, and it was entirely unafraid of him and was nicknamed Senor Cajones by the crew. The tape recorder that was one of the few holdovers from the original film that belonged to Bruce Campbell's father. The zombified Henrietta was actually played by Sam Raimi's little brother, Ted. It was an extremely heavy full latex bodysuit. With the addition of eye lenses and fake teeth, the only part of Ted that the audience could see was his tongue when his mouth was open. The shooting location of Wadesboro, North Carolina, was going through a heat wave, as I've said previously. And so the combination of this and the suit made it extremely difficult for him to wear it. He became overheated and sweated profusely in the suit to the point that several liters of sweat were drained in the styrofoam cups every night after the shoot. And then, as I said, if you watch in the movie, you can actually see sweat pouring out just massively near his face as he's being spun around.
Gross.
There is a rumor that the effects team somehow used the collected sweat in a horrendous prank on Ted on his last day in the suit.
No.
It's like they collected it and they made him drink it or something. Ew. Without him knowing. It's awful, yeah. The sounds of the evil traveling through the forest were a combination of Sam Raimi's voice and audio samples of Orson Welles, technically making this the last film he appeared in any capacity.
Okay.
After watching the final cut of the film, producer Dino De Laurentiis knew for certain the film would get an X rating due to the high amount of violence and gore. However, Sam Raimi argued that if they recut to secure an R rating, it would only be around an hour long. So Dino De Laurentiis wasn't allowed to release an unrated film, he ultimately decided to credit his production company under the name Rosebud, which allowed him to submit the film to the MPAA and release it without a rating. So that whole scene at the beginning of the movie, if you watch it, and it shows like this rose opening up, and Rosebud Productions, they just did that so they could, you know, release it for unrated. In a visual, and I think Sam and Bruce were the ones that filmed that. I think they said, you know, and a visual pun, one of the books on the can that traps Ash's possessed hand is Ernest Hemingway's A Farewell to Arms. Appropriate. The eyeball swallowing shot was actually filmed in reverse.
They
put the eyeball in her mouth and they just pulled it out. At 1 minute or 1 hour and 7 minutes and 5 seconds, Ash's first utterance of his signature comment, "Groovy," is heard. The failure of the Crime Wave movie in 1985 caused Sam Raimi's follow-up to The Evil Dead, prompted him to return to this film, even though the ending of that movie was originally meant as a closure, not a cliffhanger, with Ash dying in that reality. When Ash was driving away from the forest in the beginning after driving the bridge and seeing it had been destroyed, the branch that hits Bruce in the face were controlled by Sam. He was literally just standing off screen, just hitting Bruce in the face with twigs or whatever.
You know he loved that.
Oh, yeah, he's a ton of fun, which is another, that goes back to another thing that talks about the multi-universe. Bruce as Ash had already driven to the bridge the night before in the first movie and realized that it was broken. Yet in this one, he does it the day after he's possessed. Why did he drive back to a bridge that he knew already was already out? Like it,
yeah.
It's like he didn't know. It's like it's a different version of Ash. It kind of doesn't fit, but whatever. Because filming required a great deal of physicality, a classroom in the school used as a filming location was converted to a gym, and Bruce Campbell was trained by a local bodybuilder. When Ash's shirt becomes torn in the climax, the results are quite noticeable. He does have a six pack in this movie.
Yeah.
You know what? I remember reading this years back. He ate a whole chicken every day in addition to working out to get that body for the movie. When Ash lands back in the past, the knights welcome him with open arms, and he is hailed as a hero after killing a deadite. This was retconned in Army of Darkness, where he is treated with disdain and distrust, and is captured and led away in chains, although he eventually is revered after successfully fighting the horde of the Army of the Dead or whatever. So, after evil Ash throws Annie across the room, he sees Linda's necklace on the floor. The chain once again resembles a skull as it did in the first movie. And the one that he used to retrieve the book near the end of the film, due to the many narrative and visual inconsistencies with The Evil Dead from 1981, this film has somewhat understandably been mistaken for a remake for a long time. It was meant to be a sequel, as spelled out previously in the end credits. Evil Dead 2, the sequel to The Ultimate Experience and Grueling Terror, was filmed in Wadesboro, North Carolina, in Detroit, USA. So they actually put that in the movie so that you wouldn't think, they just remade the fucking Evil Dead movie again, you know?
You see, it wasn't a remake. It was a continuation.
But it was both?
Yeah.
The dagger is another one of the many weapons from the first movie that returned here, although it has been completely revamped. Where the dagger from the Evil Dead was an iron blade with a skull at the hilt, this one seems like a real skull with a whole entire spine attached to it, which is another inconsistency that could be from another universe if you want to go that route. The German titles for the Evil Dead in this movie translate as Dance of the Devils and Dance of the Devils 2, respectively. Out of both movies, the scene where Linda's demonic form dances marks the only time where a devilish creature is actually seen dancing.
Oh my God.
The scene where Ash is doused in blood coming from the wall was filmed by placing Bruce horizontal on the floor and then pouring gallons of fake blood on him from above. The scene was filmed with the camera turned 90 degrees to create the illusion that it was he was standing upright. So much blood was dumped on him that not only did he feel like he was nearly drowning, it was basically waterboarding. He was also, he said that he basically made red snot for 2 weeks after every time he blew his nose.
Hell yeah.
And to make matters worse, his insistence that the authentic Karo syrup formula was used to simulate the blood made him a target for every fly in the neighborhood because of that. Freddy's glove is actually in the work shed in this movie, as we covered last season. It's theorized that Sam or somebody he knew snuck onto the set of one of the Nightmare on Elm Street sequels and stole it directly off the set and used it in the movie.
Hell yeah.
They got back at him though by showing Evil Dead on a television screen in Nightmare on Elm Street. Or actually, they showed that first, and that was his response back to them. So, the poster for the movie shows a close up of a skeleton with eyes. This has nothing to do with this movie, but it could be a sign of Army of Darkness since there are skeletons in that movie.
Yep.
Sam Raimi and Rob Tappert's original idea for the film's plot had Ash held captive in the cabin by a group of escaped convicts searching for buried treasure. Bobby Joe's death was originally planned for a man and would have been much more violent with him being split in half by the tree. So your whole thing about being ripped apart is actually what they intended originally.
That's what I was getting.
In the first draft of the script, Annie was named Annie McDonald. And she had no relation to Raymond and Henrietta Nobe at all. It wasn't until the second draft that she became their daughter.
Okay.
The Book of the Dead, called Naturum Demento, or Demonto in the Evil Dead, or whatever it was, makes an appearance in this film's recap of the previous events, but it's now Necronomicon Ex Mortis. Although the prologue doesn't show Ash destroying the book in the fire like he did in the Evil Dead, note that the book itself is never seen again in this film, suggesting that the destruction took place off screen and all the recitations from the book are done from its missing pages that Annie has, which is what we basically covered earlier about it. And it's Necronomicon Ex Mortis that they go with from here on out, basically. So again, this is the franchise starter.
Interesting.
I'm going to go first. This is my five of the series. It really is. I mean, it's got the horror elements. It's got the goofiness, the Three Stooges comedy that, you know, if you love it, you love it. If you don't, you don't.
Yeah.
It's got Ash being Ash in the movie for the first time. So, and it's still got an Evil Dead vibe to it. It's not like Army of Darkness where it's medieval times basically. So, it is the best one of the trilogy, and I agree with Bruce Campbell in that assessment.
Yes, because it's his favorite. I've already given my reasons why I'm like, this is not my favorite, although I still need to watch Army of Darkness. We are going to review that here very soon, so it's after this week it will follow. But this one, I don't like it better than I like the first one, which is sad because while this is still a good movie, I can't even give it a 4 because I like the other one better. So this one's like a 3.9 for me, and it's not a rewatch for me. It's just not. I'm very curious though, because of how it ends. That's why I told you I need to give Army of Darkness a shot and watch it. I feel like the horror comedy went almost a little too far in this one. to where it was so slapstick, a little too much, that it was a turnoff for me. I don't know. It did something about it. It just felt very supernatural, but not in a good way. So I was just like, okay, they went a little too far with that. Whereas I really like the horror and gore of the first one, which is
You're not going to like Army of Darkness then, because it goes even more into the slapstick
and
comedy.
That's why I've avoided it. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I it's not that I haven't seen Army of Darkness. I just haven't watched it in its entirety because I haven't been able to. It's been very bleh for me, but it's been a long time. I mean, it's probably been a decade since the last time I've seen it on TV or my husband watching it. I believe he likes it, probably just for what it is, not because of anything amazing or this is a great storyline or the skeletons look great. I know that's none of it, you know, so that's partially why I haven't watched it, because I'm worried it's going to be like this, if not worse. And I really, 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 really prefer the first one over so far.
You're in that camp. That's all I can say.
I'm in that camp.
And I'm not going to try to talk you out of that, because if you'd asked me 10 years ago, I would have said for sure the first one was the best movie. And I stood on that for a long time.
Yeah. But, and you did say I'd probably flip-flop, and it's possible. You know, again, I don't hate this movie. It's right up there with the first one for me. I only gave it a 3.9 because I like the first one better. Better, not necessarily saying it shits on this movie. It doesn't, you know, because I feel like both movies have their portions. I just really think they could have done better with the recap of the cabin in the woods. I did not like how they handled it.
It's one of those things that the more you watch it, it's out of sight, out of mind. It's like, yeah, it's just a way to get into the movie, and you accept it for what it is and you move on. That's
what I need to do. That is what I need to do, because there's nothing I can do to change it. And why would I? It's already happened, you know?
And I'll say this. I do like the Deadeye version of Annie in this way better than I liked in the first movie, like a ton. I mean, because she's kind of creepy. I mean, she's still got the like doll-like vibes in this one, but she's more of a threat in this one than she was in the first movie.
Exactly.
Cheryl was the threat in the first movie, straight up.
Big time.
And then, and I just really dig that actor who plays Jake, just because he's so hamming it up, and I love every minute of it.
Jake from State Farm.
It's such a caricature of like what, you know, a hillbilly is, him and Bobby Joe, that like you just have to laugh at it, you know?
Yeah. So I think it goes without saying the Reverend prefers, you know, Evil Dead 2. I prefer Evil Dead 1. Look at, if you've made it this far into both of these, you know, episodes, tell us who you agree with, or if you agree with any of us, or what your reasoning is for not liking either one of them, because fucking give us a discussion, something we can talk about to explain to you. You know, you've heard our reasoning. Now, what do you think of the films? You know, if you're listening.
Again, there's a whole third camp that don't prefer the Bruce Campbell versions at all, and they like the remakes because they go way more into the horror, like even more.
That
so
would
than
probably
the first
be me.
Movie. Like, I mean, that remake, like even when it came out, I know there was a lot of people that walked out and said, fuck this movie, because Bruce wasn't in it.
Yeah.
I watched it and I was like, well, if they were going to make a movie without Bruce, they did exactly what they needed to do. It is brutal. That remake is brutal.
Yeah.
And they actually toned it down a bit for Rise, a lot of people did not like.
That's funny.
Because of it.
And if I recall correctly, you and I both really liked Rise.
Oh, yeah, I enjoy Rise. I mean, I don't have a problem with it. Evil Dead, or the Evil Dead series, to me, is the most consistent one that I can enjoy of pretty much all of the franchises in horror. Like, I can't say that about Scream. I can't say that about, because, I mean, I like Scream 1 and 2. Well, 1 I love, 2 is okay, 3, I know it's got its fans. I can't get into it. I just don't like it. 4, I know actually people hate that movie, and I actually thought it was all right. And then the new 5 and 6 have completely like fractured the fan base on that. Freddy is very inconsistent. I mean, Chucky was actually not bad. I didn't think, I mean, across the franchise, I know some people really hate, Seed, but Seed, if you get into what they're going for with the comedy, it's not terrible. But Evil Dead, to me, it holds its consistency across the board. I mean, I started out with a 4. This one's a 5. I'm just going to spoil it a little bit. Army of Darkness falls in between.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's where it's at for the two of them. So, I mean,
that's still a good score, though. Realistically, anything above a 3 is a good score.
Yeah. And the other thing about Army of Darkness to me is how quotable it is.
One-liners, I bet.
Oh, completely full of one-liners, and it reminds me a lot of not necessarily the style of comedy, but just the way that it's quotable and everything. It reminds me, and the medieval thing, of Monty Python and the Holy Grail. It kind of reminds me of that. Like, it's
oh my God.
If you can sit there and quote that to somebody and they quote it back to you, you've got a friend for life, basically.
You would be so proud of my son. He loves that movie, and I think he can quote it from beginning to end.
it's so absurd, but then there's things in Army of Darkness that are absurd, but it's the way they're delivered, they crack me up. So.
Yeah.
But there's camps in this series. I mean, some people prefer one versus the other, and we're going to have, I mean, I'm sure some of the people out there listening are going to prefer the new ones. I mean,
and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm here to tell you right now, there's nothing, because Reverend and I both really enjoyed Rise, so we can agree on that.
I love the remake.
I gotta watch the remake.
What's that?
I gotta watch the remake. I don't know if my hubby has it or if he's seen
that
it.
That movie's gonna scare the fuck out of you. Hell yeah. I'm just gonna say it.
I think I remember him saying it's hella good and that I would like it. Well, because, you know, I do like getting scared. Don't get me wrong. I might not ever watch it again. Like, I'll never watch fucking...
Okay, so you think Cheryl in the basement is bad? Wait till Mia, who actually ends up being the hero of the movie, is underneath the trap door. She is the worst.
Hell yeah.
I mean, not in a bad way. I mean, she is the one that's like, just if you see her, you're like, fuck that. I want out of this cabin now. Like, get me the fuck out of here.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to stay in the cabin with her, and we'll see. I'll probably have to watch it, you know, almost nighttime instead of at night. I'll have to ask the hubby. I don't know if he loved it or hated it. I want to say he liked it, and he's like, these movies are right up your alley. It's usually like Possession or something like that, which technically this is Possession.
The interesting thing is it also plays into the multi-universe part of it, because when they get to the cabin, the car is sitting outside.
Oh, hell yeah.
So here's the thought that the people just, I mean, to kind of put a cap on the whole multi-universe part of it. They think that the Evil Dead universe, the remake, takes place in the universe from part one, the OG Evil Dead, where Ash got took out at the end of the movie, because he didn't go back into the past. The car didn't go back into the past, and it just sat at the cabin and rotted, or, you know, just rusted all those years. And then the new group went to the cabin in the remake, and the car's still there.
Yeah.
That's what the theory is. So Ash didn't become the hero in that universe. That's why the Evil Dead are still in the cabin.
I'll still stand on the hill that Ash wasn't the hero in the first movie at all.
He wasn't.
So it was Scott. I'll never pretend that he was. I think he was a very destroyed and damaged man by the end of that movie. Which is why I agree that part two is a sequel, because he is not. He is now the hero he was intended to be because of everything that he went through. And like I said, that's the hill that I will die on.
That's also the reason why I like part two. It's because he is the hero.
He is that hero, you know. I like what he went through, though. He's a tortured soul.
And also, the reason it's slightly better, in my opinion, than Army of Darkness, I know that's kind of a spoiler for my feeling on that movie, is the sense that he becomes jaded in Army of Darkness, and he's not that hero in Evil Dead 2. He's got good intent in Evil Dead 2. In Army of Darkness, he's kind of an ass, like, straight up. Like, I mean, you know, because he's been through so much, he just doesn't care at that point, you know. Which I can't blame him. I mean, if you've been through time and everything else and had to watch your girlfriend get ripped apart, and then your maybe new girlfriend get ripped or get stabbed in the back by your hand that was cut off your body.
Yeah.
I mean, that's stuff to make you just not give a shit anymore. So And then there's the actual evil Ash in Army of Darkness to have to contend with. That's a whole other thing.
I need to watch it so that way I can comment on it properly enough. We might have the hubby on that episode. I feel like he likes it. I could be wrong, so.
I would be interested to hear what he has to say about it. I mean, like I said, it's a infinitely quotable movie for me. Like,
yeah.
You know, like Monty Python and the Holy Grail, basically.
Yeah.
Anyways, folks, let us know which one you prefer. One, two, if Army of Darkness is your thing, it's the best, by all means, or the remakes, whatever, the remake or the new movie. But, you know, with that, peace be with you.
And with your spirit.